In this week's episode, we've got a local government targeting Christians. We've got a Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas with bold advice for Texas lawyers. And we have an allegedly pro-business group backing Democrats. In this week's interview, State Representative Jonathan Stickland tells us about the power behind the throne in the Texas House. And Karen Cheshire closes us out with this week's commentary, part two of a four-part series on how citizens should pick the next speaker. Welcome back, friends, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. Check us out on TexasScorecard.com and PowerTexans.com. I'm on Twitter at TweetTonyMac if you want to find me there. To get started with this week's top news, I've got Jacob Asmussen with the Central Texas Bureau in about a big story. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton telling Austin ISD, hey, you can't discriminate against Christians.
That's right, Tony. Well, Austin ISD's new slogan is, all are welcome, but apparently only if you agree with everything they think.
All are welcome unless you're a Christian. So what are the details here? This is about the school discriminating against a Christian church.
That's right, Tony. So Austin ISD is thinking about revoking an agreement they have with a local church that allows them, the church to use AISD facilities for weekly church services.
Yeah, so basically the school makes its facilities open to the public.
Yep.
Come in on a weekend, you can host an event or something there. And this church, you know, like any community organization, came in and said, hey, we want to hold our services on AISD campuses.
Absolutely, and they actually have been holding services there. But now AISD is considering shutting them out for one simple reason, because the church holds the traditional belief that marriage is between a man and a woman.
And so you see the left putting pressure on the Austin ISD school board, and these AISD board members pretty openly saying, hey, these folks don't share our values, the government's values.
Right.
Therefore, we're going to shut them down.
Right. It's really ridiculous. And, you know, for them to say that all are welcome, but then discriminate against Christians is not good.
Yeah,
that shouldn't happen.
I mean, the hypocrisy is there.
Absolutely.
For sure. So Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton coming in, sending a letter to the board saying, hey, you're not allowed to do that. That's called viewpoint discrimination. You're a government. You can't discriminate against Christians.
Absolutely. He cautioned them not to proceed with what they're thinking about doing because it would violate, state and federal law and the Constitution.
Yeah, well, it's pretty interesting. It's good to see folks standing up and not allowing this to go on, but we'll have to see what the school district does. Will they actually change these rules and boot this church? I mean, that'll be a big lawsuit if it happens.
Absolutely.
I appreciate your reporting on it, Jacob.
Thanks.
Next, let's turn to Brandon Walton's Capitol Bureau Chief with Texas Scorecard. Brandon, you've done a little bit of writing about this. Might be surprising. We've talked about it on the show. Might be surprising, though, to listeners out there. The Texas Association of Business sounds like a conservative group out supporting liberal Democrats in the November elections.
Yes, the Texas Association of Business. This is essentially the statewide organization for the local chambers of commerce that you see across the state. Actually, a very liberal organization, people tend not to know, and they just put out their endorsements, surprising a lot of people that they're endorsing some Democrats against, pretty conservative, pro-business Republicans.
Yeah, let's talk about these, particularly up in Dallas County. I saw that they had endorsed some liberal Democrats against, good conservatives.
Yes, endorsing a Democrat by the name of John Turner against Lisa Luby Ryan, who's a Republican running up there, and endorsing Julie Johnson, the liberal Democrat opponent to State Representative Matt Rinaldi, a big conservative champion in the legislature.
Yeah, and so I guess you and I have talked a lot about this. We talk to any of the listeners, listen to every show. Hey, subscribe. Go out there, subscribe if you're missing a show. We talked a little bit about this in the past, but it's playing out even more and more. These groups that you think, oh man, this is going to be a pro-free market group, this is a group that's going to advocate for lower taxes or less regulation, you would think. No, maybe they're really more focused on corporate handouts, cronyism, that sort of thing.
No, that's why it's so important to pay attention, because if you look at what the Texas Association of Business fought for in the last session, they've been doing this for several years, but I think the last legislative session, it really came into focus. I mean, their big priorities were trying to stop Governor Abbott's sanctuary city bill, trying to keep in-state tuition for illegal aliens. They even received a big infusion of cash from a left-wing pro-LGBT group to fight against the so-called bathroom bill in Texas.
Yeah, and that was the amazing thing, was that bill portrayed by the left as some kind of government overreach. What was it? It actually said, hey, businesses, you set your own policies. Local governments, you're not allowed to come in and tell businesses how they're supposed to set up their bathrooms. It was a business protection bill,
absolutely,
if you will.
A lot of people would be surprised. You know, that's what they were fighting for.
Yeah, and so this business group gets a big infusion of cash. And lo and behold, they're out there advocating for far left policies.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your reporting on it. You know, I think we're going to see this group continue to do this, and I just need to make voters more aware that, hey, this brand, Texas Association of Business, maybe not as conservative as people think.
Exactly. You look at their own scorecard, they give their top grade to a liberal Democrat.
That's amazing. Well, thanks for telling us about it.
Thank you.
Next, let's turn to Saurabh Sharma, Capital correspondent with Texas Scorecard. Saurabh, you've got a piece up on the website about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas coming down to Texas, telling Texans some pretty bold things about how government really ought to work.
That's right, Tony. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was in Fort Worth for the annual convention of the Texas Federalist Society chapters. Federalist Society, as you know, is a group of conservative and libertarian lawyers that have been instrumental in really pushing the judicial revolution since the 70s and have actually assisted President Trump in selecting his Supreme Court nominees up until now.
Yeah, they've kind of been blown out. They go, oh my gosh, the Federalist Society, they're saying the left hates the Federalist Society, but they're the reason, a large part of the reason why you're seeing President Trump nominate some really great judges.
That's right. And some lefty reporters a couple months ago even went and said the Federalist Society is more dangerous than MS-13, the radically violent illegal immigrant gang. So I guess we must be doing something right. Well, so Justice Thomas was very clear, as he always is, on his beliefs on a lot of kind of judicial concepts that are taken for granted. First of all, he spoke very strongly on stare decisis, the principle that judges should just defer to whatever's been decided in the past and not really give it a critical reexamination. And he asked a very simple question. He said, does it apply to the absurd? And really pointed out the fundamental flaw with that idea, which is that things can be wrongly decided, and it isn't wrong for a judge to go back and say, this was wrong, and now we have a corrective.
Well, it was interesting. You saw a couple decisions this term that where they overturned past decisions. They said, this decision was wrong 30 years ago. We're gonna change it. We're going to come out with a different result now, and we understand that that makes some people uncomfortable. It's a little inconsistent. Hey, we got to fix something where we were wrong. The other element, really interesting, separation of power. Hours. I think Justice Thomas really had some bold things to say on that.
That's right. He was specifically talking about the administrative state, which is a concept that's gotten a lot of airing in judicial circles lately. The idea that you can have these executive agencies like the EPA creating rules in the way that a legislature is supposed to create rules, and then simultaneously also having their own little private courts called administrative courts that are meant to adjudicate all these rules. And he's just very concerned with this overlap of executive, legal, and judicial power that seems to be going on at the federal level. And we have our own versions here.
That's right. We have our own version of that here. We've been fighting the Texas Ethics Commission on these grounds, but it's, you know, they're kind of legislator, executive, and judiciary all packed into one. And, you know, Justice Thomas compared it to the royal courts of old, you know, saying this is something that is a return to great tyrannical abuses. Well, I appreciate your reporting on it, Saurabh. I think it was pretty interesting. Hopefully, Justice Thomas set the lawyers up there straight.
I hope so too, Tony. Thanks.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's my pleasure to welcome on the show this week our good friend, State Rep Jonathan Stickland. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me on, Tony.
So, you know, I wanted to have you on to talk about an issue that is not above the visibility level for most Texans, but kind of really ought to be. And it's about a guy named Gordon Johnson, who is a key player behind the scenes in the Texas legislature and really a critical part of the ongoing saga right now about what's going to happen with the Texas House Speaker. And so I thought you might be a great person to do that. But for listeners out there who might not know who a Jonathan Stickland is, tell listeners a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What have you done in the legislature?
Well, I just turned 35 years old earlier in September, and looking to go in for my fourth term, two-year terms in the Texas House. I represent House District 92, which is in Tarrant County, consists of Hearst, Euless, Bedford, Arlington, and just one neighborhood in Grand Prairie. Originally ran for office, was trying to knock out a 16-year incumbent trial lawyer who had been voting very liberally.
Yeah, he's a very liberal guy.
And coming home and trying to act like he was a conservative. So it was kind of a part of that Tea Party wave that came in, took out some of the bad actors in the Republican Party. And
well, and the critical part here has been, since you've been in office, you've been one of the leading conservatives in the Texas legislature, and particularly the Texas House. Pretty consistent. We kind of joke from time to time, you're either number one or number two, depending on little hairs with margins on these various ratings of who's the most conservative member of the Texas House.
I like to say I vote no a lot.
Yeah,
it's true. you know, in general, Tony, I don't think that government is the answer to our problems. So I'm constantly fighting to be a voice down in Austin for the taxpayers.
So. All right. So you're a good guy in the legislature. And listeners out there, okay, this is a good guy in the legislature, been there four terms, kind of knows, at least knows where the bathrooms are, that kind of thing. Let's talk about Gordon Johnson. Most people have no idea who a Gordon Johnson is.
Right.
Who is he? And then I guess why? Who is he and why should people care?
Well, I had no idea who Gordon Johnson was either until I got down to Austin for my first term and started talking to some of the members about, you know, how things worked and everything else. At the first start of session, after we elect a speaker, one of the first things we do is put in our request for committee assignments. And I remember having a discussion with the senior member about that, because we're supposed to fill out a little card and write down what our seniority picks are, which committees would like to be on. And I learned very quickly that that whole process is not really the way that it seems or is written down on paper in the rule book. Apparently, I was told, well, have you gone to see Gordon yet? And I'm like, Gordon? Who's Gordon? Well, he works for the speaker. And I'm like, okay, well, is, you know, are they on the state staff or whatever? No, Gordon Johnson, you know, he's part of a law firm, Johnson & Johnson, and it's basically like Strauss's political consultant.
This is the campaign guy. Yeah, basically, as people understand, like Karl Rove, it was once called Bush's brain, right? So Bush, you know, brings in this guy who is essentially a campaign consultant, but he's not just a campaign consultant. He's a political consultant, and he does as much advising about things that went on in the White House as he did about things that went on in the campaign trail. In very much the same way, you have this guy, Gordon Johnson, and a relationship between him and now outgoing Speaker of the Texas House, Joe Strauss.
Well, what I realized very quickly is that's exactly what. So, like, the most important relationship was presented to me by, you know, some of the members that had been there for a long time, was you got to be in good with Gordon. And so I was encouraged, you know, you need to go have a discussion about what you want to do and what you want to be and which committees you want to be on with this guy, Gordon Johnson.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you know, he's not an elected official. I'd never even heard of this guy before. But come to find out, you know, the Strauss team down in Austin, turns out, like, they don't even really decide what's going on for themselves. I mean, I will tell you, like, working with Joe Strauss for 6 years, the guy never asked me to do anything. The guy never, you know, talked to me about policy or tried to get me to vote a certain way. Like, he didn't really care about anything. If he cared about anything, it was the water legislation that we worked on. The first part of my career, but after that, it didn't matter. And the guy who was actually, like, you know, captaining the ship turns out to be this Gordon Johnson guy. And so, you know, that's where apparently all the decisions were made. That's where the committee assignments and who was going to be chairman. And in building some relationships down in Austin, I found out it's even more than just the legislative part of it. He's kind of the gatekeeper of the entire power structure of the establishment. And what I mean by that is he's not just influencing and making decisions on what's going to happen and who's going to do what. He's doing that with the special interest money and the lobbyists, too.
Yeah, so there's two sides to this. So you show up in Austin, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, hey, I'm going to go fight for conservative principles. And they say, hey, you want to figure out what committees you want to be on. You need to go over and get in good with this guy in this mm-hmm. law office who's, you know, a lobbyist. He's, in fact, a dog track lobby. I mean, seedy kind of interests lobbyist. And him and his brother working together, kind of, he's the inside guy, his brother's the outside guy, Johnson and Johnson working together and making a ton of dough. But it's not just, oh, this guy's exercising power over one third of the legislative process over in the House. He's exercising political power out on the campaign trail, saying here's where the money's going to go, here's where the money's not going to go, and it's the way he wants it to be.
My understanding is like, if you want to be a lobbyist in Austin of any significance, you've got to go play into that power structure as well. So like if I'm, you know, Joe Smith and I want to be a lobbyist and I want to work on whatever issue, I've got to go get in good with Gordon Johnson and his team. And how you do that apparently is you play by their rules. So, you know, they're expected to go down there and be loyal and give money to the approved candidates, the approved incumbents, and you certainly can't give any support to, you know, guys that go against their agenda. And the better job you do for the team, the more you'll be rewarded with lobby contracts in the next session. So
is this an explanation? You know, one of the things, is this an explanation for one of the things we've seen out there where you see, let's take the realtors, for example. You know, realtors are generally conservative people, generally Republican folks. They have an association that on its face is supposed to be supportive of property tax relief and things like that. Yet their association in Austin totally captured, supportive of the Democrats, you know, fights against conservatives, you know, goes against, I remember years ago, now Railroad Commissioner Wayne Christian was in a fight for his legislative seat. He was like a former member of the Realtor Board. Right. They dropped $300,000 against him. Yeah. Is this all really tentacles of this Gordon Johnson character?
It really is. So my understanding is that, like, literally lists go out prior to elections, and there's an approved list of people who can receive support from the different special interests and the lobbyists who want to be in good with the speaker's team and Gordon Johnson and Strauss and those guys. Well, you better stay on that list and you better not give outside of that list, regardless of the issues. I mean, I personally dealt with this, Tony, because, you know, I'm one of two members in the entire Texas House who is from the oil and gas industry. Well, every election I have ever had, the Texas Oil and Gas Association, TexOGA, has opposed me. Now, I have a perfect voting record on these issues, and I'm actually one of the only guys that knows the issues, okay? I'm obviously pro-energy, pro-drilling.
Yeah,
yet they oppose me every time because I'm not on the magical list.
Yeah, they oppose you because they're a part of a larger political apparatus that's controlled not by their own interests but by someone else's. Now, I want to talk a little bit about where these things are headed before we finish up. Basically, this guy, Gordon Johnson, I mean, this goes back as a family business. His father was the House parliamentarian way back in the day. He was the first head of legislative council, which is the lawyers for the legislature. Literally, one of the buildings in the Capitol complex is the Robert E. Johnson building. It's named after this guy's father. So the family business for 50-plus years has been exercising this level of control over the legislature, and now all of a sudden, the guy's puppet, Joe Strauss, has decided to up and retire from the legislature, and they don't have a clear candidate. So, you know, is this guy at risk of losing the level of control that he's exercised over the legislature over the last 10, 20 years?
I think he is, and I see the behavior of the, you know, liberal Republicans, the guys who are loyal to Gordon and that team. They're scrambling right now. I think they've thrown up four different candidates for speaker, trying to get some traction with their guys. But, you know, for those of us who are down in Austin and people who are watching this process, you realize that those four all really come from the exact same spot. They're all going out there. And they've lost control. They really have. Over the years, the grassroots have really risen up and sent down some people who won't play into the system. Rather than begging for scraps from the table, we've gone down there and made the argument that there is no table, and it's the people's house. It's not Gordon Johnson's house.
Yeah.
And it's really a threat. I mean, the fact that they do not have an heir apparent and that we have an open speaker race like we have right now tells you that their numbers are dwindling. And it's because the grassroots have been educating themselves. They've been getting involved. They've been electing candidates, and there's accountability. And, you know, shows like this one right here and different groups have been shining a light, and these guys enjoy the darkness, okay, when they don't want to have to stand up and explain who Gordon Johnson is and how he controls the lobbyists and who gets the contracts and who gets the money and then how they dole that money out and which legislators they buy and which committees those legislators are going to be on. I mean, you can see how someone in this position who is, you know, literally pulling the strings in so many different aspects of the legislative process has been in a lot of control. And thankfully, people are starting to reclaim that. It's going to be very interesting to see if they can hold on to power. My concern is just like a wounded animal, they're actually the most dangerous right at the end of their life.
Yeah, they're lashing about.
So this fight in the next couple of months for the Speaker of the Texas House, and, you know, for a lot of us, I've talked to a lot of members, and folks back at home need to know this. There's a lot of us who are literally saying that we will not elect anyone that's in with Gordon. It's time to get that whole apparatus, the whole way that Austin has worked, out of here. It's time to drain the swamp. We need to make sure that him and his team are gone, but we need to make sure it's not replaced with another one, too. So legislators are freed up to actually represent their constituents, and the bills will live and die on their own merits instead of who contributed to the power structure.
You know, I think that's the most critical part of this fight right now is that taxpayers, listeners out there, need to be talking to their representatives and saying, hey, look, it's not about personalities. You know, this Strauss character is gone, and there's all kind of other cast of characters that could replace him. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell one from the other, but the real important part here is that these guys aren't able to continue to put this Johnson character in control, and that they're not building a coalition with the Democrats like we've had for the last 10 years. I mean, that's the critical thing that we have to get rid of. We're running out of time. Tell listeners real quick, where can they get connected with you, with your campaign, if they want to know more about Jonathan Stickland?
We're on Facebook. We've got a great page, very active. Facebook.com/VoteJS, or the website is JonathanStickland.com. And I just want to say thank you to all the people out there who are the wind behind our sails, give us the ammunition to be in this fight. And there's a lot of us who are dedicated to the cause and do not plan on letting anyone down anytime soon. So we appreciate you guys, and we know that our leverage, our political strength, comes from informed voters and conservatives who act on principle.
Well, great. I agree and appreciate you for everything you do in the legislature.
Thanks, Tony.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers Program? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials in order to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearer logo on it. As a promo, we gave away a beautiful custom-engraved Glock handgun. Sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S.com.
In last week's commentary, Kerry Cheshire gave us three criteria that voters should be looking at in picking a candidate for Texas House Speaker to support. In this week's commentary, Kerry goes into detail about the first of those three factors.
Any Republican lawmaker who strikes another Straussian bargain, where his election as Speaker relies on the support of Democrats, will always be beholden to them. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Kerry Cheshire. Earlier this month, we began laying out a few factors that citizens and their lawmakers can use to judge candidates seeking election as the next Texas House Speaker. Our first requirement is a Speaker candidate must win the majority support of his Republican colleagues and be the nominee of the Republican caucus. In December 2008, Democrats nearly captured the Texas House, securing 74 of 150 seats in the Obama wave. After the election, Democrat Caucus Chief Jeff Dunham released a list of 64 Democrats who had pledged to vote for anyone but then-House Speaker Tom Craddock, a Republican from Midland who was seeking his fourth term. After brokering a deal with Dunham and his ABCDs, or anyone but Craddock Democrats, 11 liberal Republicans met at the Austin home of then-State Representative Byron Cook, where they selected Strauss only after multiple rounds of balloting. Several in the group were seen as having too much baggage to be the nominee, and too little trust in each other that they would share power when eventually they were elected. Strauss was so new, having served less than two terms, that he hadn't had time to make any enemies. His colleagues indeed described him as, quote, virtually unknown in the Texas House. With the support of Democrats and those 11 turncoat Republicans, Strauss had the majority necessary to become the next Speaker of the Texas House and was installed as a figurehead for the Democrat-Republican coalition government. Indebted to the Democrats that placed and kept him in office, Strauss granted Democrats the power to kill major legislation, such as voter ID, and handed over control of some of the chamber's most powerful committees. Two prominent examples are the Ways and Means Committee and the Local and Consent Calendars Committee. On Ways and Means, which handles all tax-related legislation, Strauss handed control to Democrat State Rep. Renee Oliveira of Brownsville. Oliveira famously required Republican bill authors to find a Democrat to support their legislation before he would allow it to pass out of his committee. And Strauss took the Local and Consent Calendars Committee, which passes more bills than all other committees combined, away from mainstream Republicans and placed it in the hands of Democrat State Rep. Sinfronia Thompson of Houston. As a result, Sinfronia Thompson has passed more bills out of the House than any Texas lawmaker since. Any Republican who strikes another Straussian bargain, where his election as Speaker relies on the support of Democrat lawmakers, will always be beholden to them and cannot be entrusted to ensure that Republican priorities receive a vote. It is essential that Democrats no longer usurp the Speaker's authority. In a solidly Republican state like Texas, the Speaker ought to be elected by Republicans, not Democrats. The push by conservative legislators in the Freedom Caucus to change the rules of the House Republican Caucus and require the nomination of a Speaker candidate within the caucus was a move that pushed Strauss to retire from the Texas legislature and opened the opportunity for authentic Republicans to elect the next Speaker. The next Speaker of the Texas House must be one that is not only chosen by the majority party, but one who will champion the values of the majority party that Texans have entrusted with their government for over two decades. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Kerry Cheshire.
Join us back here next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. In addition to the top news, Carrie Cheshire will take us through that second factor, looking at each candidate's record, that voters should be looking at in picking the next speaker. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.